We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome back. We are on Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you are listening to Culture Vigilante. We're back after a quite lengthy radio hiatus in 2013. I'm happy to be here again in 2014 with Cindy McGee of Show Me Patriots. Thank you, Cindy, for coming back on the radio with me.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
We, took a couple of months off, had some things to deal with outside the sphere of Missouri Grassroots. I hope you enjoyed the rebroadcasts that we made available for you, but starting off in 2014, we have just a ton of stuff to deal with in Missouri and beyond as far as expanding the grassroots movement, informing you and helping you get engaged in the grassroots movement. And one of my New Year's resolutions for 2014 I have several, like most people, but I spoke of it often in 2013. Folks, we need to, Rome is burning and things are worse than we ever imagined that they would be. Things are really bad. Obamacare has hit. We told you here first, long before anybody else was talking about it, that Obamacare was going to be a freight train of destruction across the country. Now people are starting to feel the effects of it. It's killing the economy, which was already bad to begin with. You know, we have Benghazi issues. We have mass government corruption on a wide scale. There's so many things to talk about, on a national and a state level here in Missouri and in individual states. And in 2009, when the Tea Party was born, it was such a great breath of fresh air and a great movement to help kind of push back at the corruption and the destruction of the Constitution. What we need to do, though, since 2009, as a grassroots movement, as Tea Partyists, as libertarians, as conservatives, as whatever you want to label yourself as, is this year, folks, 2014 is the time to expand the circle. We've been talking to ourselves for several years now. And while many of us have become informed and engaged, we are not growing our numbers sufficiently to be effective in changing state and federal governments. So you will hear me talk about that a lot in the coming year in 2014, about how things that we need to do in 2014 to expand our reach. And that means everybody listening, everybody on every Facebook page, every Twitter account, every grassroots group, every Tea Party group needs to stop meeting and talking with each other about what the issues are, and you need to develop a plan to reach outside your bubble. You can't live within the bubble anymore, folks, and try to be effective or expect to be effective in changing what's going on in this country, and it is bad news. You know, we've followed a lot of Tea Party leaders. We've idolized some of them, and we worship at the feet of some of the great wisdom that they espouse. But folks, if you don't start reaching out beyond your bubble and start looking to pull people in or start engaging people, because I'm telling you, people are starting to feel it. The people that were not engaged before are starting to feel it, and now they need some reaffirmation, some confirmation from others that they're not crazy. Just kind of how we felt in 2009. Cindy, I don't know if you remember. In 2009, we were kind of looking at things and we were kind of all stunned at, you know, the craziness that was going on. Can this be happening? Is it real? Well, now we've lived with it for several years. We understand it's real to a huge degree. And now you need to reach beyond, you know, the people in your Tea Party group and go outside your bubble, put flyers in your neighbor's mailboxes, hang notices at the water cooler, start talking to people, send out emails beyond your Tea Party email list, and start educating folks around you. Cindy, don't you feel that that's kind of the issue going on with the Tea Party movement and the grassroots movement right now? We've been so busy talking to ourselves.
Yeah, I do. I think that's absolutely right, and I think it's been true for a while. And it is time to reach out beyond that and to talk to people outside of our circle of influence, our circle of friends, our circle of association. You know, we've got to be willing to reach out and talk to other people. And like you said, you know, post it somewhere. Put post-it notes at the gas pump.
There you go.
I don't know. Just do whatever you have to do to just kind of reassure people. You know, we're here. We care. You know, you're not alone. And if you're concerned about Obamacare, you're not alone. A lot of us are concerned about Obamacare. You know, just reach out. Don't be afraid to talk to people. And Chuck and I have a really cool opportunity right now because we moved back early fall and to a different part of the state. And we've talked to people, and we're just amazed at how often things come up and we broach the subject and we kind of get into conversations, and it is amazing how many people are on the same page and worried and concerned.
Yeah.
And don't really know, you know, what to do. And so it's encouraging, though, because we're finding that there are a lot of people out here that haven't been involved with the Tea Party. They haven't been to any of the meetings or the rallies or anything else, but they do care about the issues. And, you know, if we reach out to these people, maybe we can help them find a way to direct their concern to make a difference.
Well, it's starting to affect them. You know, it's that low-information voter that only gets their news from, you know, late-night comedy or just a snippet on network news. I mean, there's a huge – I had a really interesting conversation with Randy Tober last week. He hosts a Saturday morning talk show here, a conservative talk show in St. Louis, and I think we're going to have him on in the next couple of weeks because there's another issue we're going to debate. But one of the things that we talked about was the fact that the Tea Party is not big enough to do the job, and we have to reach outside our sphere of influence because there are statistics out there, folks, about where people are getting their news, and most of the people are, you know, you've got like maybe 1 million of the segment of the share getting it from Fox News, and then you've got 12 million getting it elsewhere. So while, you know, 10 years ago we didn't have 1 million folks getting conservative news, it's good that we do now, but it's not enough. We still are very well outnumbered. But here's the deal. People are going to start feeling it now with the Obamacare issues. You know, their bank accounts are going to be really hurting in 2014, especially in 2015 when those premiums hit and they're not going to be able to get health care and people's jobs are being cut. And I think something that we need to discuss pretty soon anyways are the jobs numbers. I think the unemployment situation in this country is really, really bad. I think we're being lied to about what the real numbers are. And, you know, I know a lot of people that are not employed or underemployed. And when people talk about economic recovery, there is no economic recovery in this country. You are being fed a line of baloney. And the sad thing is a lot of people that do not spend their time engaging and informing themselves on government issues believe it. All you have to do is float it out there, and people just suck it in like it's fact. So, you know, while I may be out of a job or I may be underemployed, I believe that everybody else is doing okay, and it's really just me because this is what I'm hearing on the news. So my resolution for 2014 is to develop some strategies, talk about some strategies for us to get information here and to take it outside the bubble, folks. We've got to expand our reach and expand our knowledge. We're going to have some great guests this year. Tonight we have a great lineup. Starting off tonight, one of the big issues that we've got going on here in Missouri and across the country, because, you know, Colorado just legalized marijuana, is people, everybody wants to talk about the marijuana legalization issue. And I am not for legalizing marijuana. I never have been. But we have St. Louis Tea Party's Bill Hennessy going to come on with us. We had a little blogish debate a couple of weeks ago about this issue, and he's going to come on and talk about his stance on marijuana legalization. And Frida Q of Missouri Precinct Project is going to be on with us a little bit later. Missouri Precinct Project has been on Missouri Grassroots Radio before, specifically on Culture Vigilante. If you do not have an organization like this in your state, you need to listen to this segment, because these ladies have done for Missouri Precinct Project. They've also started reaching out to other states, helping other people form precinct projects in their own states to help grassroots folks network across the state to get things done. And Frida will explain a little bit more about that later on. Tom Martz from the Locke and Smith Foundation is going to be on with us. I think the consent of the governed rally was today in Jefferson City, Missouri. I think they had a rally down at the Capitol, and they gave out their Locke and Smith Awards every year. They give out awards to the most constitutional legislators, and he'll be on to talk a little bit about that. I've already got next week's show lined up as well. There's so much stuff going on. We've got so many things to talk about. One of the big issues that's happening in Missouri right now that's been an issue across the country recently in the last couple of years is right to work. And it was a big deal last year. We tried to get some legislation through the Missouri legislature last year, and the Speaker of the House kind of poo-pooed it, I think, because he was trying to salvage the political careers of certain Republicans across the state in certain counties. There are Republicans, and I think a lot of them are in my county, in St. Charles County. We kind of know who you are, and we're watching you, just in case you didn't know that. There are some Republicans who are not going to support a right-to-work vote on the floor, and so they're going to put it up on the ballot for us to fight the unions with all that union money, and they're going to leave the Missouri people twisting in the wind. Cindy, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I kind of know what your thoughts on that, but let's talk about that a little bit, because this is going to be an issue. I've heard Tim Jones espouse the virtues of right to work, talking about it like, you know, it's just better than sliced bread, and he really wants right to work for Missouri. But, I mean, really, he's the one who has stopped it from moving forward.
He's the one that's in the position to bring it forward to the floor in the right. Missouri legislature to make sure that it gets debated. Now, he certainly has no control over the Senate, but he has a lot of, as Speaker of the House, he has a tremendous amount of ability and power, if you will, to move that legislation forward and make it significant in the Missouri legislature. He said the other day that he intends to do that. Let's hold a seat to the fire on that and get behind him if he's really going to do that.
Yeah, I think what the battle plan is, and we'll have Patrick Warner from Americans for Prosperity on real soon to talk about that, but I think what the battle plan is they're going to stall the bill that requires a House vote, and they're going to push a bill that requires putting it on the ballot in, I guess, 14. I'm not sure if it's 14 or 16, but they're going to want to put it on the ballot, leave it up to the folks of Missouri to decide. I think it happened that way in the 90s. I think it was the 90s. And it got defeated because of the union persuasion money campaign. And he's going to let the... Go ahead.
Why do we need to do that, Lisa? Why can't our legislature deal with this? We still own both sides of the Missouri legislature. Yes, I get that Nixon can veto it, but they can also override that veto.
That's my thoughts exactly.
We elect these people to go and do a job. Can you just get it done for us? Why do we have to have a ballot? Why does it have to be a ballot issue?
Well, you know, exactly. I mean, the whole United States and Missouri Constitution is set up as a representative government, and it's exactly what you said, Cindy. We have a representative government. We elected people to go represent our interests in Jefferson City. I want them to put it up to a floor vote. I want to know who votes for it and who votes against it. And I don't want to have to spend all of my time and energy battling millions and millions and millions of dollars coming from the unions who know how to target low-information voters.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
You know, they're already – yeah, if Wisconsin can become a right-to-work state, there, you know, through the legislature, I don't know why Missouri can't become a right-to-work state.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I'm a bit puzzled as to why they are wanting to do that, other than perhaps the idea being that they want an amendment to the Missouri Constitution to get that done. I just want the legislature to deal with the issue.
Yeah, I want them to do their job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think
something
that we need to do.
That's what they've been elected to do, and that's what they need to do. And why? And I agree with you. You said it. Why are we going to subject the voters of Missouri and our state to the corrupt influence of what has become a very corrupt system, the unions, and all they're extremely powerful, extremely well-heeled money-wise. I don't know how we battle that if it becomes a valid issue.
You know, and I think something that we need to spend a lot of time on here in 2014 is teaching the Patriots the difference between substance and Yankee Doodle. And there was a story. Yeah, I know. It just never ends. There was a story. Oh, I hope I can find it. Nope, that's not it. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can find this in my bookmarks. There was a story. Roy Blunt. Oh, and I guess I left it on. I guess I deleted the story. Roy Blunt introduced some legislation in the Senate to require that every bill is earmarked with a tag to be paid for by the taxpayers because they spent just an ungodly amount of money, taxpayer money, on public service announcements promoting Obamacare. Now, on its face, that sounds like a great idea. You know, I think, you know, the people have a right to know where, you know, what their money is being spent on, and if they're being, you know, bombarded with propaganda, you know, paid for by taxpayer dollars, I think that's a fabulous idea. Why is this a Yankee Doodle bill? This is Yankee Doodle legislation to the hilt, and they do it on a state level, and they do it on a federal level. Well, you know, we've got 2014 elections coming, and I think you're going to see a lot of political posturing going on between Republicans and Democrats at a state level and on a national level, all the way up to 2016. And when these people write these ridiculous pieces of legislation, they do it for the airtime and the publicity that they're going to get. This is all about political posturing. It doesn't, you know, if they even had a snowball's chance in July of passing a bill like that, because they don't, the Democrats in the Senate would never allow it to get out of the Senate. If they had a snowball's chance of passing something like that, what good does it really do? Because the low-information voter is not going to know one thing from another on a bill. They're not, you know, they don't go to the legislative websites and read the bills. It is absolutely nothing but Yankee Doodle. He was on a radio station somewhere in Missouri just touting this bill, and they were kissing his feet and telling him how wonderful he was and what a great idea it is. But, you know, it's those kinds of bills, folks, on a state and a national level that we've just got to – you got to be wise about these things and stop allowing these people with platforms to blow all this smoke up your skirt when they really are not doing their job, the job that you sent them there to do in the first place. If they didn't want to have Obamacare publicized through, you know, discuss it with the Congress and stop the appropriation. You know, there's a problem. There's a problem, and you don't want your state or federal legislature using Yankee Doodle legislation to brainwash you. So we're going to talk about Yankee Doodle legislation a lot this year. There's a lot of other things to talk about, too. I think what we're going to do now is take a real quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about marijuana legalization with Bill Hennessy. And I hope he's ready, because we're going to beat up on him good.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
On September 15, 1787, the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia took up debate on whether or not to allow amendments to the new Constitution and, if so, what method of amending should be adopted. Initially, it was proposed that only the legislature could make an amendment. Quoting from James Madison's notes of that very day, Colonel Nason thought the plan of amending the Constitution exceptionable and dangerous, as the proposing of amendments is in both the nodes to depend in the first immediately, in the second ultimately, on Congress. No amendments of the proper kind would ever be obtained by the people if the government should become oppressive, as he verily believed would be the case. Unquote. There followed a strenuous debate and many propositions, motions, votes, and refinements that arrived at the article as it exists today, giving states and the people the power to meet to amend the Constitution with no regard for the legislature or executive. The time that Mason foresaw, the time of oppressive national government, has arrived. Join us on Monday night in the Hour of Truth as we explore this method of peaceful revolution. We'll discuss how, when, and why. And we will be glad to hear your opinions on exactly what we need to do to fix the issues we face today, using Article 5 of the Constitution. Can we? Will we take our government by the horns, wrestle it to the ground, and return our republic to a government that serves the states and the people? Let's talk about it. Mondays, 7 p.m., the Hour of Truth. Call and participate on the studio line 347-677-1835.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death!
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm here with Cindy McGee and Bill Hennessy of the St. Louis Tea Party. And Bill's been on the show before. He's one of the original founders of the Tea Party, a great speaker, great advocate for the grassroots, totally wrong on marijuana legalization. And we got into a little blogging debate a couple of weeks ago, and we'd love to have him here tonight to kind of beat up on him a little bit and try to we're not going to change his mind. He's not going to change our mind, but we're going to present both sides of the issue. Thanks for being on tonight, Bill.
Oh, my pleasure. And you know what, Lisa? It's really weird. Every time I'm on your show, I have to broadcast from my car in a parking lot somewhere. this is two for two on this. I'm always in my car talking to you.
So why are you in your car tonight, Bill? Where are you?
I did another radio show right before this out in the middle of in Kirkwood, and so I didn't have time to make it home, so I parked my car, and here I am.
Was it marijuana legalization tonight in Kirkwood?
That came up, but it was more about the general problem of winning elections.
Oh, okay. Okay, so great. Let's talk about all those things. Okay, Bill, I love you. You've done so much for the grassroots movement, the Tea Party movement, and your fire and charisma has catapulted the St. Louis Tea Party into what it is, one of the leading tea parties across the country. But have you lost your mind? What are you thinking? I mean, this is one of the most divisive things among the grassroots and the conservative movement. It's very polarizing. What are you thinking?
Yeah, it probably shouldn't be all that polarizing. It's not
but it is.
When you look at when you look at the trends in polls, this is something that really the conservatives and people who believe in self-governance should have been out in front of a long time ago, as William F. Buckley was in 1973. And obviously in 1973 I hadn't even heard of William F. Buckley or National Review. So I kind of grew up, and he was really the first political philosopher that I paid any attention to, because he was on Channel 9 and I could watch Firing Line every week. And so I just kind of assumed that that was the conservative position from the time I became politically aware. So I've never really changed my mind on this. I always thought that the same powers that gave us prohibition, the people who thought that with the right strength of government and the right draconian punishments for personal behavior, we could perfect human beings. And we know that didn't work with alcohol prohibition. And shortly after we ended alcohol prohibition, we launched cannabis prohibition. And while the results were not as dramatic, because there are not as many people who use cannabis or want to use cannabis as there are who use or want to use alcohol.
Maybe because it's illegal.
But it wasn't in 1936. So, for most of America's history, it wasn't illegal. And the reason that the war on alcohol was a lot more obvious and destructive in a short amount of time than the war on more visible, let's say, than the war on marijuana is primarily because of that. Yeah, a majority who use alcohol and a fairly small minority who regularly use in, let's say, in the last 12 months. Marijuana, though about 50% have used it in their lifetime.
Okay, so many things to cover here. Okay, so to me, this debate, not only because it really is polarizing. I mean, it is really, I think you've got the libertarian aspect crowd who thinks, it should be legal. You know what? And I'll tell you something. I will admit to you, in a perfect world, I really don't care who smokes pot either. I don't care if it's legal or not either. Here's the problem with that. If you're a person who's ever been affected by alcoholism, you have to look at the use of marijuana at least as severe as the issues with alcoholism. And here's the reason why I'm so opposed to this, because and I do not believe the debate that that the use of marijuana is less harmful than alcohol or any other drug. I don't believe that. I think that there are studies coming out that show it has much longer-term, long-range dangerous effects. There are a lot of reasons. I don't buy that debate that using cannabis is not harmful. Okay, but here's the deal. We don't hold people accountable for their actions anymore in America. If you want to use pot, or you want to drink too much, or you want to, use cocaine or whatever, I really don't care as long as it doesn't affect me. But it does affect me. It those kinds of things creep out into the culture. It creeps out into the society in so many different ways, too many ways to mention here. It does affect you, and we don't hold people accountable. As you said, we used draconian measures to hold people accountable. I don't find them draconian. I don't think that we're severe enough on offenders of alcohol. Just a few weeks ago, some kid got off a manslaughter charge because he was rich. For drunk driving, he plowed in and killed four people. We're going to legalize pot?
Would you be willing to say that those are two different issues?
No, I'm not willing to say that.
You wouldn't say that the misapplication of justice, which does tend to favor the rich over the poor, mm-hmm. is a separate issue from liberty and self-governance and personal responsibility?
No, because I think it's all part of the bigger picture where our government has fallen apart. Justice is supposed to be part of our government, of our Constitution. And we
so
don't,
the,
you know,
so part
the Constitution
of the
is held.
The Constitution is to outlaw things that it doesn't want us to do simply because it doesn't want us to do them, or simply because it doesn't want to enforce the just consequences of abuse?
Because it doesn't want to enforce.
Okay. So you still can't see those as separate issues?
I think in the bigger picture, in the forest, not the trees, I think it's all tied together. You don't see that.
So, but my guess is though that you do support the Second Amendment rights, correct?
I do.
Do you
and I think you should be
only
severely
because it's existing law. So you seem to put a lot of weight on the fact that existing law prohibits possession, use, sale of marijuana. But if the Constitution did not allow for if the Constitution did not include the Second Amendment,
mm-hmm.
then to be consistent, I think you would have to be opposed to legalization of firearms, because abuse of firearms mm-hmm. can lead to all of the same problems that you've just described.
No, I would agree. I think that abuse of firearms should be severely punished, just like the abuse of alcohol and marijuana and any other controlled substance should be severely punished, and they're not.
So having said that, it seems to me that there really are two issues here. One is the correct and just application of the law, and punishment for abuses of privileges. The other is the specific things that should be prohibited. And so what you're saying is that if it weren't for the Second Amendment, you would be all for prohibiting the private ownership of guns.
No, I'm not saying that at all. If you didn't have the Second Amendment and we had free range to have guns, fine. Just like if we had free range to have marijuana and alcohol and all the other things, I think that would be fine. But the problem is we don't enforce the abuse. We don't enforce the violations. And we do have a problem there. I think it's a bigger picture issue. And I don't think that we need to be throwing more fuel on the fire at a time when our Constitution is so fragile right now, when we're not enforcing it, we're not living by the rules,
exactly.
And we don't have a justice system.
If you have a law that you're not enforcing, you should get rid of the law.
No.
If this is
my next point. And Cindy, jump in on this because we had this discussion.
Oh.
If you have a law that you're not enforcing, you should enforce the law. You should shore up your legal system. You should shore up your culture in which you need to enforce your regulations, because people need. Go ahead, Cindy. I'm sorry.
No, I'm going to ask just real quick. So following your line of logic, I would ask you this. How about if we legalize cocaine, meth, all of these other things that we have laws against, that we're spending time, energy, and money running around with this drug war, whatever, dealing with? Why don't we just legalize it all? And prostitution, you name it. Let's just legalize it. Let's legalize everything. Let's just go full bore, liberty for everybody. You can do whatever you please. And then but we are going to have to do something about penalizing, having consequences for abuses that, as Lisa put it, impose on us. I don't think that's a reasonable. That leads to anarchy.
We have gone from liberty
to anarchy if we want to go down that road.
You do have to maintain the balance. I think a society has to maintain a balance between tyranny and anarchy. And I honestly don't think that cannabis prohibition is the equivalent of tyranny.
I said we've got if you can't. I didn't say tyranny and anarchy. I think that anarchy leads to tyranny, but liberty gone awry, liberty without consequences, liberty without the rule of law, at some point, in some ways, becomes anarchy, which then leads to tyranny. And I think the road that we're going down with this cannabis discussion, that's the question then, if we're going to legalize marijuana, why don't we legalize all of the illegal drugs? And let's personal responsibility for their use of everything.
Yeah, well let's begin with marijuana. Marijuana is a higher scheduled drug than heroin and cocaine. So the government, by its rules, considers marijuana more dangerous than heroin and cocaine. And actually, that comes from the UN. It didn't come from the United States. So we bowed to the UN on that. And I know that's a fun, slippery slope argument. Why don't we just legalize everything and abolish all the police forces and let people defend themselves? And I think everybody knows that's kind of a silly argument.
No, Bill, it's not, because once you start down the slippery slope, then don't you think that once you take that first step off that cliff, down the slope, how are you going to put the brakes on? That's my question. I'm not in support of any of that. I'm saying that's the slippery slope we're going down. I can point out examples of how we've gone down that road already.
Yeah.
Why is it any worse to permit people who want to smoke marijuana to smoke marijuana than to permit people who don't want to buy health insurance to buy health insurance? The existing law says that you have to have health insurance.
Right.
Right? That's the existing law. That's now on the books in the Supreme Court. The only way to get rid of it is to reform or repeal the law.
Right. So
people who don't have health insurance have been shown to have irresponsible behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Very often, someone other than the person who was irresponsible pays the price for the trouble that they get into.
Don't you think you're going to have that then with more people out there getting high, just like you do with alcoholism? I mean, if you've ever been touched by alcoholism, if you've ever known anybody who's an alcoholic, or you've ever had alcoholism in your life, I mean, those people pay a price for being exposed to that. I mean, it's the same thing. And don't you think that's going to grow when people start smoking pot?
Honestly, no, because I think that there will be a bump in marijuana usage at the beginning. I don't think it'll be a whole lot different than it is right now. I don't think that a lot of people will become regular pot smokers. I honestly don't. And we look to the Netherlands, we look to Portugal, we look to countries that have much looser cannabis laws in the United States, and the percentage of people who admit to smoking there, where there is, you know, no consequence to admitting it, is not much different than it is in the United States. It's not statistically significant difference. So I don't think that you're going to have a big change in that. And the other thing is that when you make the slippery slope argument, we're trying to correct the slippery slope that we got into in the beginning in about 1913 with the progressive movement that thought it was going to perfect humanity by outlawing alcohol and then outlawing marijuana and outlawing all sorts of behaviors and practices and ideas and philosophies and everything else. It seems to me that if you go down to the Jeffersonian or Madisonian line of reasoning, we should allow everything that doesn't directly impinge on the liberty and freedom of the people. And I you know, the slippery slope argument goes both ways. This law didn't exist in the 1920s. It didn't exist at the time of the founding. It came about when we had a lot of federal enforcers sitting around looking for what to do next, because the Congress and the states had taken away alcohol prohibition.
Okay, let's address this. There's a couple things I really want to address with you. Okay, one of the things is the money. One of the other things is why isn't the cannabis movement trying? I mean, if they want to legalize cannabis, a big problem with the people that oppose it is, I mean, we just fundamentally disagree on the effect that it's going to have on the culture. I mean, you know, you make your points and you have your statistics to research and we have our statistics to research and we just don't agree. So we'll just have to agree to disagree. Why doesn't the movement also, with the legalization of marijuana, try to bring along with it some enforcement? I mean, this is from standing on the other side of it, what we see is, you know, anarchy coming at us like a freight train. We, you know, there's no rules, no nothing. I mean, because we already know that alcohol abuse is pretty much ignored in this country. Nobody, enforcement for abuse along with the proponent of making it legal?
Well, let's separate those two things. Let's separate because what you made one case is that cannabis reform advocates want a free-for-all, and on the other side, you were saying that existing that alcohol abuse is not dealt with, or there are no consequences for alcohol abuse. Whether a drug is legal or not, if you're not enforcing the laws, it doesn't make any difference. I can't deal with that. But everybody who is in favor of cannabis law reform that I deal with understands the need for appropriate regulation and consequences for violating whatever the law is. As a matter of fact, we understand that there are consequences for violating the law as it is now, and there should be.
Why aren't we hearing more about that? If that's true,
I mean, I agree with you. Okay, you want to
because
have
we believe. I can address that directly, and I know. I think I know where you're going, which is that why do advocates of reform only talk about legalization or decriminalization and never about the correct laws should be? Well, we do. It's out there all over the place. If you look at what the laws in Colorado and Washington, the regulations are deep and thick, as they are with everything that government gets into these days. The reason we don't talk about it is because we believe that the existing law is unjust and bad for society. We believe that cannabis prohibition has done more harm than good. And we believe that because of, you know, and I know that you don't want statistics, but you just look at the numbers and the consequences. If you're black and you're caught with a joint, you're going to suffer a lot worse consequence than if you're white and caught with a joint, everything else being equal. That's just the way it is.
So if
you're rich and caught with a joint, you're not going to suffer. If you're poor and get caught with a joint, you are. That's just the way it is. And that injustice is made worse by a fundamentally unjust law, which is prohibiting people from possession, growing, or usage of something that occurs naturally, that requires no processing. You're not even allowed to grow hemp. We import tons of hemp from Canada every year because it's a fantastic material, but you can't even grow it in the United States.
Okay, so
we import it.
So your
that
argument
doesn't necessarily require you to legalize marijuana usage, Bill, to be able to grow hemp in this country. You simply have to regulate how it's grown so that it's not used in an illegal manner that could be harmful to society. So is it true,
Bill, that your argument is, how to put it into words, first of all, I don't really understand how it's, I mean, I know you just explained it, but I don't, maybe I just don't accept that the prohibition of it is harmful to society, but let's say that it is, for argument's sake, because of the injustice, inequality. Why not address the injustice inequality? Why do we have to make marijuana legal instead of attending to what the real problem is the discrepancy, the corruption in our legal system, our justice system? They're not the same, legal and justice system, but why? To me, this is an intellectually dishonest debate when it kind of seems like people just want to be able to get high without being arrested instead of really addressing the myriad of issues that we have within our government on all levels, in all branches.
I don't think it's ever intellectually dishonest to promote something, especially something that, at least in the circles that you run in, is rather an unpopular position, because you believe it and you've believed it since you were 15, 16 years old. So mm-hmm. I don't think that my position is intellectually dishonest. I believe that the consequences of the misapplication of the law between rich and poor, white and black, is exacerbated by the fact that you have an already unjust law that attempts to prohibit the use, possession, and cultivation and sale of substance that grows naturally.
Okay. We're just gonna go poppies. Round and round.
Poppies grow naturally.
This is going forever.
We have an outlet growing poppies in our yards. It can be worked around. That's a disingenuous argument, I think. I mean, I don't mean to be really mean about this, but I mean, come on, let's.
Well,
God
forbid they should ban the growing of dandelions, and you should have one pop up in your yard.
Well, true. I mean,
well, where were these folks?
You know, cannabis grows naturally in Missouri, and people are railroaded into federal court because it happens to be growing on their property.
Right.
No, but Bill, I think it's a silly injustice. You wanted
law,
to separate the issue,
which is why 55% of voters are now in favor of legalization.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
In every demographic group except the old.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was Mayor Slay put out a poll, and I'm not real sure how accurate these results are, but it's huge. I mean, more than 90% favor the legalization of marijuana. 89% feel that the if the sale and possession of marijuana by adults were made legal, do you think that it would make the state's economy better? 89% believe so. Do you favor the or oppose the complete legalization of possession of small amounts? 92% favor. It just goes on and on. And
yeah,
St.
that
Louis,
doesn't sound scientific though. Those numbers are too high.
Yes. St. Louis City is very liberal demographic, but there really are a lot of people that do favor this issue. But where were all these folks
majority
when they were taking away my Sudafed? I'm not kidding. I want to know, where were all these people when they were taking away my Sudafed? I have to get a prescription for Sudafed. I want to know.
Yeah.
I think that's a valid point.
Yeah, and that's exactly the argument that we're making. Rather than addressing the problem of the meth labs, we're trying to turn pharmacists and doctors and storekeepers into law enforcement agents. We're running out of people. You know, pretty soon we're all going to be law enforcement agents.
Yeah, but why wasn't this same lobby who wants to smoke pot and get high behind stopping them from taking my Sudafed away?
Well, first of all, that's not federal.
That's a national
law.
Movement. No, that's a national movement.
It is a national movement, but the people, like, if you go to Reason Magazine, Reason.com, which strongly in favor of cannabis law reform, they also fight government stupidity at every level and on every issue. I disagree with them on a few issues, but their philosophy is correct. If you always err on the side of liberty, at least you're going to be making mistakes that trust people and expect people to live their own lives and take personal responsibility. The other error is to fall on the side of government and believe people are incapable of living their own lives, and that's what I've been fighting my whole life.
Yeah, and we have to find a happy balance between that somewhere. I'm not sure.
Legalization with good regulation and an appropriate tax level, so that we can fund. We have to fund the enforcement of the regulations, and we have to be able to pay for problems that may result. And hopefully they won't. Hopefully the studies that have shown that marijuana actually is less harmful to society than alcohol, hopefully they're right. But I think we're going to find out one way or the other, and I just wish that the right was a little bit more consistent in its pro-liberty speech by adopting this position, which they should have when William F. Buckley told us to in 1973.
Well, I would agree to some extent, but I think that is the problem with the redefinition of what libertarians are and Republicans or conservatives. I think that definition has been blurred because of this insurgence of libertarians into the conservative movement since the Tea Party has erupted. But that's another point for another day. Bill Hennessy, we beat up on you pretty good here tonight. I hope you'll come back and debate this issue with us again, because it's going to be a hot topic for some time to come. Thank you for coming on the program tonight.
Thank you. Anytime.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with the ladies from Missouri Precinct Project.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order, because the global order is changing again. And the institutions and rules that worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We just beat the tar out of Bill Hennessy from the St. Louis Tea Party. He's a great sport. I hope he comes back and talks to us about marijuana legalization again. Don't agree with them. Don't know that we're ever going to change each other's minds on that issue, but Bill always does a great job in presenting his side of the story.
I didn't get any one point of it. I just don't get it. Sorry.
You know, that was Frida Keough from Missouri Precinct Project. She is joined by Judy Safka. We're still here with Cindy McGee. You know, I just think it's a philosophical difference that is just not going to go away. Some of us believe in it, some of us don't, and we're going to just scream at each other till we're blue in the face. I just wish it would go away till after the 2016 elections, because I just don't think this is the time for us to be discussing this and polarizing our conservative efforts. But
I think they should wait for at least a year to see what the experience is in Colorado.
Yeah, you know, I don't think, well, I think it's going to take more than a year. I think that there's a lot of research out there to suggest that marijuana use is really harmful, and I don't think that it's going to be widely publicized, because I don't think the media will want it to be publicized, and I don't think that the conservative half or the libertarian half of the conservative movement is going to do that either, because they want to legalize marijuana. And
you made a good point.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Cindy.
I was going to say, Lisa, you made a good point, and it was one that I wanted to come back to with Bill, and we didn't get the chance, and that is he was talking about how they do want to see regulation and so forth of marijuana and penalties for violations. But the thing that you brought up with alcohol is we haven't learned how to effectively impose penalties for abuses of alcohol that there are laws to prevent in our country. So we're going to legalize another substance that's going to cause more problems along the same line, and we haven't learned how to deal with the laws that are written to prevent abuse of the one substance that's already been legal for a long time, and we're not effectively dealing with it. So we're going to introduce another one that we still have, and we can't work it out.
Right.
So how is that logical? How does that help us as a nation to move forward? How does that help our children? How does it help us to have an orderly society?
Yeah,
and
I
there's
think
the anti-smoking crowd.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. There's so many things wrong with this debate right now. It makes my head spin. But let's move on to bigger and better things. Perhaps the Missouri Precinct Project can champion this cause as they've championed so many others. If you've heard us before, if you've heard our previous shows with Frieda and Judy on before, you know a little bit about Missouri Precinct Project, but let's give a little bit of an overview about what you do here in Missouri and how you reach out to other states. Frieda, hit it.
Yes, I'm here with the Missouri Precinct Project, and I want to restate and reemphasize the basic goals of MOP, and that is to rebuild the party from the ground up. You don't like the way the National Party operates? I believe our strategy is the silver bullet. You can make a difference by running as a committee man or woman. Across the state of Missouri, there are many open positions, and we want to urge you to go to your central committee meetings and find out which positions are open, and then file for those positions. Once you are a committed person, you move up to various other committees, and pretty soon you can make a difference. Over the past 3 years, we, together with others across the state, were able to elect conservatives to the state committee and change the party leadership. And while some people might not agree with the new leadership, but we showed that it can be done. But we need more conservative committee people across the state. People should go out and file for those positions. Filing starts February 25 and runs through April 7.
So basically,
that's our
the Missouri Precinct Project, what you do basically is you're kind of the grassroots movement infiltrating the establishment on steroids.
That's correct. And it can be done. And we're not the only ones. This is going on across the country where the grassroots people elect committee people, which then move up through the committee structure, and pretty soon they can affect change at the state level. And if we have enough states that do this, we can affect it at the national level. So don't, you know, you always hear people complain about the national level. Well, we need to affect the change. It's up to us. Anyway, that's one of the big pushes we want to reemphasize again in 2014.
Absolutely. So while we've all been busy watching what's going on in Washington, D.C., Frieda Keogh and Judy Sofka and some others have been very busy organizing precincts. It goes precinct by precinct and county by county all across the state of Missouri, developing a network so that when issues come up in our state, they can put out a blast to notify people to come to arms to talk to oh, that's a little inflammatory. That's, I don't want to get thrown off the air or arrested for that. But, you know, come about and go to Jefferson City with pitchforks and torches and pound on doors, you know, and let the legislature know that they're not operating in the cover of darkness, that we're watching them. And people want something done differently. People want conservative values.
I won't preempt what Judy is going to talk about, and we don't necessarily get involved in a lot of the topics that you hear, but like Common Core, Agenda 21, and some others, we truly support that. And because we have developed a network across the state, we can rally people and tell them to go to this meeting and get something done. But the other three things that I want to talk about, what our big push is this year, again, people say, I don't know what to do. Well, I'm telling you what to do. Sign up this Through the Vote and start researching the registered voter database in your county. You can do that from home on your own computer. You don't have to go anywhere. You research what is in the database, duplicate addresses, number of registered voters at a UPS store, all kinds of things that you, it's easy to research that, and you turn it into your county clerk and advise them that this is what you found. Of course, they have to research that too, but you help your county clerk clean up the voter rolls. That's one thing. The other thing, and this is most important, people have got to become poll workers. There is too many polling places across the state where Democrats claim they are Republicans and work the polls as Republicans, but they're really Democrats. If you do not have the bipartisan team in the polling place, there's no telling what they can do. They can do all kinds of stuff if they collude and there's no Republican there. It is vitally important that Republicans sign up for poll workers. And it's not just in St. Louis that's a problem. It's across the state. And that's an easy thing to do. Call your county clerk, tell him you want to be a poll worker, and start now so you can get experience by the next big election. It's important. And the third thing that I want to talk about,
now.
This is very big. We are pushing right now. We have legislation together with a group, a bipartisan group. We are pushing legislation to eliminate electronic voting machines.
Why is that important?
The Missouri Constitution says our elections need to be open and transparent. Well, they're not. The counties that use electronic voting machines, they do not have access to the code that programs those machines. We don't know what those machines are counting. If there's a Smith and a Miller on the ballot, does it count 5 votes for Smith every time somebody pushes a button? Does it add them correctly? Nobody knows. And then people say, oh, well, the electronic machines have a paper tape on the side that you can verify. Well, that's nice. Most people don't check it, and St. Louis County does not rely on the paper tape anymore because it jams up. It can jam up for 2 or 3 hours, and all those votes that were voted on that machine, you can't verify a thing. So this is an important issue. We want people to call their legislators and tell them to support this bill. It's House Bill 1416 with the sponsor is Sue Enslinger, and we have 8 co-sponsors already. And the Senate bill is 623, and that was sponsored by Brian Nevis. And so we need all the help we can get. We were in Jeff City today, Judy and I, and we were walking around the Capitol talking to lots of people that are on the elections committee, asking for their continued support. This is the second year we're doing this, and to help us get it through this year. So I'll let Julie pick up the rest.
Okay, well,
you can ask questions.
Okay, well, how was the consent of the governed rally today at Jefferson City? I didn't go. Did you have a good turnout?
Pretty good. Yeah, and I gave the same little speech that I just gave here.
Oh, very
and
good.
And I got applause. I got applause lines. I was like flabbergasted. So people like the idea of doing away with the electronic machines because by now a lot of people know you cannot trust those machines. They're not reliable. I could give you some examples, but I don't want to go in any further here. I've already talked enough.
Okay, go ahead, Judy. Hit it. What's on the calendar for Missouri Precinct Project in the next few weeks?
Okay, hi to you. I'm kind of the communications end of the operation here, and I've been kind of collaborating with some folks out of the Kansas City side. And Frida didn't mention, but I will say that we work to get county coordinators. I've mentioned this in the past. We're working toward the goal of all 114 counties. We're about a third of the way there. But as you mentioned earlier, it allows us to communicate effectively across the state on a variety of issues. So Frida mentioned Through the Vote. We're working to do a tour through Missouri with Matt Armstrong, who's the national director of Through the Vote, to familiarize people with the program and to hopefully get people trained throughout the state to utilize the program. That's going to be running from January 27th. He'll start in Kansas City, go to Joplin on the 28th, Lebanon, Missouri, and Jeff City on the 29th, and he will end that leg of the tour on January 30th at the Educational Policy Conference here in St. Louis, where he'll give a workshop on the afternoon of January the 30th. We believe that will be open to anyone, not just the conference goers necessarily. And if anybody would like to keep abreast of what we're involved with and receive our newsletters, they can just either go to our website, which is www.moprecinctproject.org, or get on our email list. So that's one of the first things coming up here real quickly. Then there'll be a second leg of that tour coming up in February, kind of working around our first big event of the year. Our seminar / workshop will be on February 15th at the Pillar Foundation, and we've entitled this event Election 2014, How to Get Involved and Make a Difference. And let me get my notes here real quick. We're going to be covering a variety of issues that Frida touched on, the importance. We basically want to cover the how-to. We want to get, we all know what the problems are. Now we want the solutions and how people can get involved and make a difference. And to every one of us, that we are self-governed. That means we have to be involved ourselves. Otherwise, we just are subjects to whoever else makes these decisions for us. So we're going to be talking about the importance of the committee positions, how to secure those positions, voter issues, including paper ballots, voter registration, becoming a volunteer at the poll. And then the afternoon session will be with Matt again, telling people hands-on how they can use the True the Vote system. True the Vote's a national group. If anybody doesn't know this, they had interceded for Alan West down in Florida in his election where they found voter fraud and actually filed lawsuits. And wherever they find corruption and illegal voting practices, they do pursue this. Of course, the federal government has kind of tagged them through the IRS. They've had to endure a lot of harassment in that regard. Let's see. I'm trying to go quick. I don't know how long
I have
here.
No, you have
here.
Plenty of time. Don't rush. You have
okay.
plenty of time.
Okay. I am kind of involved. You mentioned several issues we're involved in. We kind of had to, there's so much going on that we try and focus on those things where we can make a difference most effectively on a local level. Those issues being Common Core, of course, are children's education. Another big one is Agenda 21. Those plans and schemes are coming to us on the most very local levels through our city councils, our county councils, all these smaller government agencies, if anybody has followed the Blue Wave situation where we have success, that was pushback. It was a federal land grab of 18 million acres between Missouri and Arkansas. And by merely mobilizing citizens to go to their county commissions in those affected counties, there were 31 in Missouri, I believe, is the total, which in these county commissions only consist of three people. By educating those people, many of them didn't even know the consequences of what was happening. So the citizens actually educated the county commission, the commissioners, on what was happening and the threat from the federal government. And they all stood strong together and pushed back. And so the federal government rescinded first the Blue Way. And then as of this month, they've totally dissolved the program. So that was a huge success for the grassroots and our ability to organize.
You ladies were instrumental in helping the network mobilize because of the connections that you've made across the state. And you ladies helped Ike Skelton on that project very, very well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ike did just a fabulous job of organizing. And Ike is our MOP County coordinator in Laclede County, so we want to, you know, thank him for representing, you know, MOP so well in that effort. And this is what's so great about finding leaders throughout the state, because when we have these issues that affect us locally, we can join and combine our voices to make a difference, to push back on some of these bigger issues. And it's, even though it was the federal government, it's so powerful how we were able to really stop this in its tracks on the very most local level, you know. So that's very encouraging, and it should be get involved. That this kind of illustrates the reward of that, you know, if you can be watchful, go to your school board meeting, go to your county commission, see what's going on, and you really can make a difference. Now, we knew, however, that they would not give up. So coming up is the National Park Service, again, a federal agency, was going to have meetings about the Ozark National Scenic Riverway, and they've been canceled twice due to weather, but I wanted to announce that, and let me get to those details here. They're calling for public meetings that have been rescheduled because those others had to be canceled due to the snow that we had. Starting tomorrow, January 16th, in Eminence, Missouri, Friday, January 17th, in Salem, Missouri, Tuesday, January 21st, in Van Buren, Missouri, and then the last one on January 22nd, in Kirkwood, Missouri, at the Powder Valley Conservation Nature Center. Now, those dates and times, if anybody's on Facebook, you can go to our webpage, I mean our Facebook page, rather, and see those details. We will also, I will make sure they're not on our website currently, but I will try and see if we can get those posted real quickly here because they're coming up. or you could write us at Missouri Precinct Project at gmail.com. And if anybody would like to have the details of those meetings, there's also a Missourians Against Agenda 21 Facebook page that we're part of that also has these dates posted. So we, again, illustrating the success we had with the Blue Way, if we can just get people to attend these meetings, make their comments, and if they can't attend, you can submit your comments to, how am I doing on time here?
You're fine. Go ahead.
Okay. The plan can be reviewed online at www.parkplanning.nps.gov. Let me see here.
Julie, is all that on the Facebook page?
Do what? It is on the Facebook page. I was just concerned about people who may not have be on Facebook, if I could give them the address. Here's the website where they can make their comments. I guess they wouldn't have a computer if they don't have Facebook. But no, it would be www.nps.gov/OZAR for Ozark, indicating the Ozark situation and the riverway.
Okay, just real quick for the folks who don't know what that blue way situation is, and we'll have some folks on to talk about that as time goes by. Last year, Missouri and Arkansas effectively fought off a governmental overtake of, two-thirds of Arkansas and one-third of Missouri, where they wanted to control all the lands around the rivers and lakes in that region.
5 million acres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
And they would have been effective, too, had some very astute and engaged patriots not raised the red flag on this and mobilized quickly through the Missouri Precinct Project to get people together to go and talk to the various heads of those communities. So that's just one of the issues.
The whole Blue Ways initiative was canceled by the federal government.
Because of the uprising. Yeah, because of the uprising.
Exactly. Yeah, and I really give... I'm sorry. I was going to say, I really give Ike a large measure of that credit. He did a fabulous job organizing and sending teams out to each county, and it was just people engaging in their own communities. With this newer effort with the National Park Service and the Ozark Scenic Riverways, not only will it affect the land and business owners, but it will affect visitors who visit these areas and want to access these Missouri treasures. So we all have a vested interest in this, and basically all of these things which are coming to us by way of Agenda 21 schemes, that's what they all fall under, it's about global control, is the threat to personal property rights. And that's one of our most basic freedoms that is guaranteed to us by our Constitution, is our right to own property. Mm-hmm. And it may be the people in these areas right now, but when could it be our property that's being threatened? So,
right, if they can do it to them, they can do it to you.
Absolutely. So we need to stand strong and stand together because we might be next. And it is a threat to our freedom. I think it's huge. It's something we need to all educate ourselves on. If we don't know about Agenda 21, there's mm-hmm. just gobs of information on. Just Google it, and
okay.
you'll get an amazing amount of information. I was going to say there's
go
two Common Core events coming up real quick.
That
we have a county coordinator in Platte County, Teresa Emerson. Their group is planning a Explore Common Core seminar on Friday, January 24th at 6:30 in the Kansas City area. I'll be posting that on Facebook as well. And we do send out email blasts with all this information. So if people want to get on our email list, go to our website, and you can sign up there or just email us at, as I said, MissouriPrecinctProject@gmail.org.
Okay.
Is it .org or .com?
.com.
Okay, .com. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then on the 18th, there's going to be one organized by Concerned Women for America and Missouri Coalition Against Common Core, and that's going to be at the Capitol, running from 10, and the last session, and it starts at 2. I'm not sure when they'll end, but everyone's invited to attend that. And
all
I
right.
think that's all I have.
All right.
Thank
Missouri
you.
Precinct Project is the epitome of what we were talking about at the top of the show. This is an organization which you can get involved in, and you can bring in, this is where we need to go outside the bubble, folks, and we need to expand our reach here. And this, you have the perfect structure to join in here and do this. You can join Missouri Precinct Project. You can get all their information. You can become active. You can help educate others. Don't miss this opportunity. Frieda and Judy, thank you. I hope you'll come back again very soon and keep us updated on the events.
Well, thanks for having us.
Okay, we're gonna take a quick break, and we will come back with Tom Martz of the Lock and Smith Foundation.
Bye.
Hello, it's Dave, and I'm here to tell you. Hello, it's Dave, and I'm here to tell you that on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, we talk about the fair tax on the Fair Tax Show. That Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Missouri Grassroots Radio, we explode the myths, we tell the truth, we get to the bottom of this tax code that ought to be the one to replace the IRS.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve because peace really does come through strength.
We're back. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, and you're listening to Lisa Payne Nager. This is your Culture Vigilante Show every week, Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. I'm here with Cindy McGee and Tom Martz of the Lock and Smith Foundation. I'm assuming that you're just freshly back from Jefferson City, Tom. How are you?
Actually, I did not get the opportunity to go to Jefferson City. I had to take care of other obligations.
Oh, well, I hope you have some good news for us about the Lock and Smith Foundation Awards. I know that you're privy to all that great information, and those awards were presented today. Is that correct?
It was awarded today, and we ended up with a three-peater and a repeater.
Really?
If that makes any sense, yes, ma'am.
Well, before you reveal the results, why don't you just give us a real quick synopsis of what the Lock and Smith Foundation Awards are?
The Lock and Smith Award is a granite plaque that is awarded to the most, let me see how I've been phrasing this all day long. The person whose voting record most aligns with the philosophies of John Locke and Adam Smith, the Constitutions, the Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence.
Okay. And every year, the Lock and Smith Foundation members go through the legislature, all the bills that file through the legislature, and tally the votes based on the criteria that you set up for the constitutional adherence. And you choose one from the Senate and one from the House, and you award those every year. And how many years have you been doing this?
The award that was awarded today was year number 4. Legislative session 2014. We are now going into year number 5.
Okay. So, drum roll, please.
Which do you want first, the Senate or the House?
We'll leave that up to you.
Okay. Well, in the Senate, our repeater is Senator Will Krause.
Ah, very good.
He won last year's as well, and he has been a finalist 3 years in a row on the Senate side. He narrowly was defeated by Jim Lemke a couple years ago, and then in 2010, the first year that we gave the award out, he was actually a finalist in the House. So for all
uh-huh.
3 years that we've been doing this, he has been a finalist.
Okay. Well, that speaks very highly of his voting record.
It does speak highly of his voting record. His constituents, as long as they want a person who is constitutional, should be very proud of the person that they place in office to represent them in their Senate.
We're getting some interference on your line.
Okay, how about now?
Okay, much better. Okay, who was the House winner this year?
Our three-peater is Dick Marshall.
Oh, good deal, from Kansas
City.
Yeah,
Will was from Lee's Summit, which is there just a little bit east southeast of Kansas City, and Nick is from Parkville, I believe, which is a little bit northeast of Kansas City. So Kansas City is well represented.
Absolutely. That's an
must
that's
be
interesting.
In the water.
Yeah, totally different from the St. Louis region for sure, out of the two major cities in the state. Oh, my gosh. Well, that's wonderful. So tell me, Tom, we have the legislative session has opened.
Yes, it has.
So what's your impression? I know you and I kind of probably differ on the right to work issue a little bit, but what's your general impressions of things kicking off?
Well, in some of the legislation that we've seen, we once more have government overstepping its governmental limits. And one of the pieces of legislation that I've looked at earlier today, basically, it prohibits a health insurance provider from excluding anyone within their plan as long as they are willing to participate at whatever the insurer's plans, procedures, and policies are. But that should be something that's up to the insurer and not government to regulate or dictate or mandate.
Isn't that kind of an offshoot of Obamacare?
Yeah, pretty much. And this year what we plan on doing is...
Whose bill is that?
We're already... Who what?
Whose bill is that?
I don't know. I don't look at the sponsors, nor do I look
that's
at
right.
who...
Yeah, that's something that we should note, that Locke & Smith is a nonpartisan group. You guys don't look at the sponsors. And you guys have had Democrats register on the radar quite often in your tally votes, right?
Yes, and for people who don't understand, I got to use HB 436 for this example because it's the best one to use.
Okay, what is
436? HB 436 last year was the Second Amendment Preservation Act.
Okay.
One portion of that bill was the Second Amendment Preservation Act. That was 4 pages. The other 22 to 26 pages all dealt with things that were supposed to be relating to firearms, and it was all on the state level. One of the issues that we found is that in the last section of HB 436, there was a change being made that you could be detained or arrested for violating school policy.
Right.
Which basically gives the school a legal precedent. Because in reality, even though you may have not broken any law, you could be arrested for breaking a school policy. Well, that part of the bill had nothing to do with firearms. And according to the Constitution, Article 3, Section 23, I believe it is, anything within a bill has to have something relating to it in the summary or the title of the bill. And if it is a bill relating to firearms, this piece, that section of that bill had nothing to do with firearms whatsoever. That makes the bill, according to Missouri's Constitution, unconstitutional. Now, Democrats,
right,
every single one of them, voted against HB 436. Their vote was actually the correct vote. Now, I'm not saying they voted no because they were defending the Constitution. Sometimes you can do everything right for all the wrong reasons. Their vote was the vote that was accepted as the proper vote because of sections of HB 436 that violated the Missouri Constitution. Therefore, anyone who voted no on it scored a point, and at the end of reading every single piece of legislation that makes it to the third read, those individuals who score the most amount of points end up being awarded a grand plaque. It just so happens that there are times where we have Democrats who have voted in a manner that places them as finalists. This year we actually looked at the Senate side, and I do believe we figured out that 67% of the time, there's no opposition to anything that occurs in the Senate. which means every single one of them either voted yes or no for it, just I mean, like everyone else did.
Right. Well, all right. So as the legislative session goes on, you're going to hear Tom back on the show. We're going to discuss various pieces of legislation because one of my pet peeves, and we talked about it at the top of the show, with Roy Blunt and his legislation to earmark or to tag bills for the taxpayer funding, are Yankee Doodle legislation. And Tom helps me identify those bills, and we bring those bills to your attention, and you'll hear this sound when we find those bills.
Yankee Doodle came to town riding on a pony, put a feather in his hat and called it macaroni.
Tom's got his own lead in.
I'm still speechless at that. That's just the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it all kind of falls apart at the end, and that's what Yankee Doodle legislation does. It doesn't do a damn thing for the folks, and we hope to punctuate that point very finely in 2014 and educate the folks and make them more adept at spotting this garbage when it comes out, when it's being spewed out of the mouths of politicians when they're trying to win you over, and they're not doing their jobs. So
yeah,
I'll
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, I anticipate a lot of that kind of legislation coming through since it's an election year.
If you can read it and it looks like it don't matter who they are, whether they be Republican or Democrat, makes no difference. But if you can read it and it looks like this individual is putting this bill forth as a means that they can pat themselves on the back and go back to their area or go back to their constituents and say, I did this for you, that is a classic example of Yankee Doodle legislation.
Yeah, it's a campaign vehicle, and it does absolutely nothing to secure your liberty and freedom. So
right.
We're going to be on it this year. We're going to be on it. Okay, so Tom Martz of the Locke and Smith Foundation, thank you for coming on the program tonight and letting us know who the finalists and the winners were for this year's Locke and Smith event. Have you got anything else going on? You know what I want to know? Do you have any idea, Tom, are there any other organizations like yours in any other parts of the country?
That goes to the extent that we do, I think, in all sincerity in my research, that we are the only organization, whether it be on a local, state, or federal level, that reviews legislation in the manner that we do, in the amount that we do. Generally, organizations are formed for specific reasons like financial or taxing or things of that nature. And the reason that we end up with sometimes differing results than, you know, like somebody's going to say, well, I'm 100% conservative because this organization said I was. Well, that organization probably took about 10 different pieces of legislation or 10 different votes that they looked at, and they attached that label to that individual. We looked at over 500 pieces of legislation last year. Or I should say we looked at over 500 votes last year. We looked at over 230, 240 pieces of legislation in the House and almost 200 pieces of legislation in the Senate. And if it makes it to what is called third read, that means it makes it to the floor of either the House or the Senate, and it got a floor vote. That is, those bills, all of them are reviewed by the legislative committee. So we actually are working from January to about August to get all this complete. Yeah, we do run a little bit behind. This year, the way we hope to be able to benefit the people of Missouri is with Nick Zuberger's Vote Track app. We are right now working on a spreadsheet. And all the bills right now that are popping up in the daily activity reports, we are reviewing them, putting them in a spreadsheet. Nick is going to put them in his Vote Track app. If we don't agree with the bill, you will see on the spreadsheet where we've rejected it. We give you the section to go look at. and we give you the lines to go look at if you're looking in a PDF format. If you're not looking in a PDF format, HTML, you just look for the bolded words. But in this manner, we hope to be able to stimulate people to pick up their phone, call their representative, call their senator, and say, hey, I read this piece of legislation. I looked at this section right here. This line to this line, what does it mean? Because it appears to me that you are doing something, you know, that's not what we would consider a proper function of government.
And this is a great VoteTrack app, too. You've got it. It's available in Missouri, Kansas, and Nebraska, and it lists all the bills that are going on. It's got the senators and the reps listed and what their bills, you know, their associations with the bills and where they're from. Great information. I've got it on my iPhone. So definitely download that app. It's called VoteTrack. And if you don't live in Missouri and if you live in Kansas or Nebraska, you have that available to you as well.
Yeah, it would actually be nice if we could get an organization lined up in Kansas, and there supposedly is a somewhat like-minded group in Nebraska who's kind of doing the same thing that we're doing. They're just not doing it with every single piece of legislation that makes it to the floor for a vote. And
uh-huh.
In Nebraska, they only have one assembly. They only have the Nebraska Senate. There is no such thing as the Nebraska House of Representatives.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're
work?
Bicameral or unicameral, or there's a certain word for it, but they only have one assembly chamber. So if it makes it through that assembly, it automatically goes to the governor's desk.
Oh, my God. Wow. Well, this is a great app, folks. So download it if you can. Go to lockandsmithfoundation.com.
The easiest way is to go to lockandsmith.com, that's lock with an E, and you will find a link for the VoteTrack app there. Right now it's only for Apple products. Nick is working on the Android application. So for those people who don't have Apple, it just your app is coming soon for the Droid. And
okay.
You just put a lot of time, energy, and effort into this app, and we hope that it becomes one of the most used voting applications in the state of Missouri this year.
Absolutely. It's certainly a lot easier than navigating the website, at the state capitol website. Tom, thank you so much. We hope to have you back very soon. Let's start digging into some of those bills and start identifying some of that Yankee Doodle legislation.
You bet. Thank you for having me on, and I want to congratulate Senator Will Krause and Representative Nick Marshall for being the Granite Plaque Award winners for Legislative Session 2013.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Yankee Doodle came to town riding on a pony, put a feather in his hand and called it macaroni.
Okay, folks, we have been following the issues with education. Cindy and I are both homeschool moms, ex-homeschool moms, very involved in educational issues. There have been some very disturbing stories in the news over the last year or so about homeschooling issues in the United States and in Germany. And at various times we've had on the folks from parentalrights.org and HSLDA, Homeschool Legal Defense, on to talk about just how those issues affect us here in the United States. And there was a story last week about the Wunderlich family being denied their right to homeschool. And I was able to speak to Will Estrada from parentalrights.org and Homeschool Legal Defense to give us an update on that issue earlier this week. So let's listen to that interview now. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and we have on the line with us today Mr. William Estrada of Homeschool Legal Defense and parentalrights.org. And if you have been listening to the program for a while, you know that we have been very closely following education issues and issues concerning homeschooling and parental freedoms here in the state and across the nation. And Mr. Estrada has been on with us several times to give us updates on some very critical cases that are going on both in the United States and in Germany. And we have had a ruling last week from a case in Germany, the Wunderlich family, who has faced persecution there in their country, and he's got some very interesting updates on that family's case and some information on how that affects us here in the United States. Thanks for being on with me today again, Mr. Estrada.
Great to be here, Lisa. Thank you.
Happy New Year, and I understand that you folks are very busy out there on the East Coast battling tyranny and injustice against homeschooling and parental rights.
Well, absolutely the case. We're busy in all 50 states. Many states, the legislative session has kicked off, so we're busy there. I'm working on the Hill to make sure that the federal government leaves homeschoolers alone, and then we also have the international work we're doing.
Okay, so last week I read about the Wunderlich family, and we've been following that case along with the Romica case here in the United States. This is a German family who has been under the thumb of the German government concerning homeschooling. Why don't you give us a little background on that case and tell us what happened last week?
Absolutely, Lisa. So just by way of introducing this, if there's any new listeners, there's a family who in 2008, they fled from Germany. Their name is the Romica family. They fled to the United States. They claimed asylum. They were granted asylum in our country. Then the federal government appealed it. They're trying to deport the family. And right now we have a cert petition pending before the U.S. Supreme Court to decide of whether the Supreme Court will take this case and then decide whether the Romica family can legitimately claim asylum fleeing from repressive persecution in Germany over homeschooling. So that's one family. Germany for a long time has opposed homeschooling. The Romica family fled here and claimed asylum. There's another family, however, the family you mentioned, the Wunderlich family, or as the Germans would pronounce it, Wunderlich, and this family, they've remained in Germany. And they were homeschooling for a while. The authorities knew about them. They had threatened fines, but the family had continued to homeschool. They believe that this is their God-given right. The children, the four children, want to be homeschooled. They're getting an excellent education. But finally, in August of last year, the four children were seized in a raid by 20 armed police officers and social workers in Germany. So the German authorities had finally had enough. They said, "We are going to, by force, remove your kids from you simply because the parents are choosing to homeschool." And in Germany, they do not allow homeschooling whatsoever for any reason. The children were removed. They were brought away. They were put into a government-run home. They were brought to the public school. After an international outcry, thankfully, the children were returned to the home 3 weeks later. But there was one condition. The German court said, you must have the children go to public school. The parents said, you know, even though this is a horrific violation of our religious freedom, of our parental rights, we terribly miss our kids. We want to have them home, so they were willing to do that.
Now, it's important to note there was no abuse going on in this family. The children were well-adjusted. They were academically successful. There was not a problem. It's just the long arm of the German government exercising their power over the freedom of choice in this family.
Exactly the case. There was even a finding by one of the courts that the children were doing very well academically and socially. However, it was against the authorities' decision that they didn't want anyone homeschooling, and that's why they brought in the 20 armed police officers and social workers to remove the kids.
Amazing.
So fast forward a few months, the children have been going to public school. They're actually doing well academically, but they and the parents, they desperately want to be educated at home. They believe that is what God has called them to do, and they feel like it would be better for them academically. So the family went to the court and said, we know homeschooling is against the law in Germany. However, we would like to go to another Eurozone country, France, where homeschooling is legal, so we could act out our religious beliefs, so we could educate our children at home. And the reason they had to go to the court was when the children were removed from the home in August, the German authorities confiscated the passports. And so they said, basically, we're not going to return these passports. And the family went to court and said, can we have our passports back so we can emigrate to France, to another Eurozone country where homeschooling is legal? And in a shocking and just a terrible decision, on December 18th, the family court judge, his name is Marcus Malkmus, he refused to return the passports. What he said in his order was that it was necessary to keep the Wunderlich children in German public schools to make sure that they were integrated into society. And then he went on to say if they're allowed to be homeschooled in Germany or anywhere else, the consequences might be that the children would grow up in a parallel society, in quote, grow up in a parallel society without having learned to be integrated or to have a dialogue with those who think differently. And that's what he said. He said that I think homeschooling is wrong in Germany, in France, and anywhere, and you may not have the passports, you may not leave this country. It's a shocking decision, not just in the homeschool community, but in the field of human rights, because it's a judge refusing to allow people to move within Eurozone countries, which is something that ever since the European Union was created is part of the Charter of Human Rights. And it really reminds us of repressive regimes where people are not allowed to leave a country if they wish to.
You know, this is shades of, you know, I'm a woman of a certain age of things that I saw growing up in communist Russia, things that were, we thought, eradicated with the elimination of the Berlin Wall, and now it's right back at us, and we're dealing with it again, and it's just amazing. I mean, my children did not grow up seeing this kind of oppression, and this oppression is just amazing.
We all remember the horrific tragedy of the Berlin Wall, dividing families, of how it was policed by armed guards, and how people who were trying to get into freedom from East Germany to the Western West Germany, some of them were arrested or beaten or even killed. And even though there's no physical violence going on, it's still shocking to see Germany so determined to stamp out homeschooling and parental rights that they're going to also refuse to even let a family legally emigrate outside of Germany.
Yeah, well, it just reeks of government trying to do, it's a social engineering project of the German government. They don't want you to be in control of your own children. They don't want free thought or free speech. It's a social engineering.
Well, the Judge Malkmus's decision makes it clear. He thinks, and the German government apparently thinks, that they know better than parents how children should be educated. And that's what this comes down to at its root.
Okay, so let's go across the water now. We're in the United States. There's another German family here. You know, we're dealing with a myriad of educational and parental rights issues here on our home soil. There's another family here who fled Germany. Homeschool Legal Defense is handling this case as well. How does the decision in Germany help or hinder the Romaicas? Give us a little history on the Romaicas and tell us how this might help or hurt them.
Right. So the Romaica family, they're a family who they fled to the United States in 2008, again a German family. They came here. They were facing persecution. They were facing threats of prison, loss of their children. They had already paid enormous fines because of their decision to homeschool. And finally they said, let's turn to America, to the United States, where parents have the freedom to educate their children as they see fit. They came here, and in 2010, a U.S. immigration judge granted them asylum. He said, you face persecution in Germany. It was an amazing opinion. He went through the history of this dating back to the 1930s, where homeschooling was prohibited in Germany, and he said, this is outrageous. Unfortunately, what happened after the family received the asylum hearing and were granted asylum is just tragic. Our administration filed an appeal saying, no, this family should be deported back to Germany. They won before the immigration board that reviews all immigration judges. They won before the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. And now we have a petition to the U.S. Supreme Court begging the Supreme Court to take this case and to rule that, yes, this family, they are legitimate asylum seekers who should receive the benefits of our country's broad asylum protections for people who are fleeing a repressive regime or who are fleeing persecution in their home country. We are praying that the Supreme Court will take this case. We were heartened right before Thanksgiving when the U.S. Supreme Court ordered the Department of Justice to respond to our cert petition. A cert petition basically asks the Supreme Court to grant a hearing in the case. So we'll know sometime around mid-March if the Supreme Court will take up this case. If they don't take up the case, then this family, the Romaika family, could very well be deported to Germany and face the same situation that is happening to the Wunderlich family in Germany, which would be absolutely heartbreaking. And when you look at kind of homeschool freedom in general, we are incredibly blessed in this country with the measure of homeschool freedom that we have. But it's been pretty interesting to see some of the Department of Justice's briefs where they've argued that there's no human right for parents to be in charge of their children's education, that it's perfectly legitimate for a country to ban homeschooling if the country decides to. And, I mean, if we lose this case down in the road and in the years and decades to come, will we start to see more politicians in our country say maybe we should follow Germany's example? It's pretty scary to think about that.
Well, that was my next question to you. If this does not go well for the Romaikas, I mean, we already know. We already see these kinds of persecution and almost tyrannical tirades from family court judges in this country relating to homeschooling. If we lose this case, if the Romaikas do not prevail here, what do you think the implications are for the average American citizen who chooses to homeschool their family?
For U.S. citizens, I think in the short term, it will not impact our freedom here in the United States. We are blessed with, unlike our friends in Germany, we are blessed with an incredible constitution that does grant incredible freedoms to the citizens. Actually, what the constitution specifically does is just limits the role of the federal government and government in general, so it leaves these rights to the citizens, the Tenth Amendment to the states. But long term, we see a court, we see politicians who seem less and less inclined to adhere to the Constitution. And I think some of the briefings that the government has filed in the Romaika case kind of show this trend that we see a little bit towards taking away freedom, towards restricting the right of parents to educate their children. And it's something that HSLDA has been fighting in our 31 years of existence. It's something we're fighting every year in state legislatures to fight against attacks to threaten homeschool freedom. And if we lose in this kind of offensive case where we're trying to expand freedom to people who flee to our shores, then down the road we could be fighting on our home soil to protect the right of U.S. citizens to be able to homeschool their kids.
Do you think that anyone, the powers that be, are watching these cases here to help fuel the fire for Common Core control?
I think the Common Core is separate from the Romaika issue, from the Wunderlich family issue, but it does fit into the same trend that we're fighting and unfortunately losing in Germany of who gets to decide how children are educated and the care that children should receive. Should it be the government? Should it be courts? Should it be government bureaucrats? Or should it be the parents themselves, the ones who have the God-given right to direct the education and upbringing of their children? And one of the concerns we have with the Common Core, just philosophically, is it's taking these decisions away from parents, away from teachers, away from local school boards who are accountable to parents, and it's putting them in the hands of national education bureaucrats. And that's the first step towards totalitarianism, where you take control away from local people who see the kids, the parents, the local community, and you put it in the hands of the national bureaucrats. So from a philosophical point of view, that's one of the big problems with the Common Core. It's one of the big problems with what's going on in Germany.
Amazing, amazing. Well, thank you, William Estrada from HSLDA and parentalrights.org. If you want to get more information on these issues, you can go to parentalrights.org or hslda.org. And I'm sure on the front pages of both of those websites, you'll see information and updates on these cases. Is there anywhere else or anything else that we can do to help the issue along?
You know, talk to your friends, call your members of Congress, and tell them about what's happening with the Romaika family. And if we win this case, if the Supreme Court takes it, then I think there are many other people in Germany who would be desperate to flee to the United States for the freedoms that we have.
Wonderful. Thank you. I hope you'll come back and keep us updated on the issues. We're all watching it. Thank you so much for being on top of it.
Lisa, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, we're back, and I guess we're just about ready to wrap things up. It always amazes me. I'm always worried about filling up the 2 hours, and we always end up running long. Next week, we have if you're a fan of Culture Vigilante and you've been listening to us for a while, you can remember in 2013 one of the big stories that we had was about Mark Baker and his family farm in Michigan. I think it's Michigan. And he's a pig farmer who is being persecuted by the government, fined $750,000 for pigs that he is keeping there. They're trying to actually run him out of business, trying to say that he's raising feral pigs. I had a long conversation with him this afternoon. There are a lot of things going on with that case. He's up. He's due back in court in March again. I think that they have spent $250,000 to date defending themselves. Mr. Baker is a former Marine. I'll have to check with him, but former military person, one of the bravest men I have ever talked to in my life, just will not back down, is absolutely resolute in standing up for his rights. He's going to be back on with us next week, so I'm really looking forward to that. Cindy, busy week. Flash fire start to the new year. We were going to talk about a lot of things tonight that we didn't get around talking to.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was no problem filling the time because there were a lot of things that were on the agenda that never even got brought up. So,
one of the things that I want to talk about maybe next week is the attack on the Tea Party by Republicans. I wrote an article last week on Examiner.com. My congressman, Republican Blaine Lutkemeyer, went on a local talk radio show here in St. Louis and just blasted Heritage Foundation, Freedom Works, Club for Growth, calling them all kinds of nasty names, liberals in conservative clothing, Republican agendas, trying to undermine the Republican. I mean, just terrible, terrible. So you can go to examiner.com, stlouisexaminer.com, look for Lisa Payne Nager or St. Louis Political Buzz. You can read that article. We'll talk a little bit more about that next week and hope to maybe have some folks on next week to talk about that as well. Cindy, what do you see as going on in the 2014? I mean, people are kind of tired. I'm kind of tired. And there's a lot of stuff going on.
Right. People are tired and I think discouraged, which you can kind of understand that. But I think that you know, we're either in this for the long haul or we're not. And we obviously have a bigger battle ahead of us. And I think, you'll relate to this, Lisa, and your listeners, too, that, you know, we were talking earlier this evening about back in 2009 when we all were really jumping in and getting started, the Tea Party was taking off, et cetera. And I think that a lot of us had a tremendous amount of optimism and hope and belief that with the voices that were being raised, which was very significant at that time,
right.
I mean, it was pretty much unprecedented, to be honest with you, for our side to make that much noise.
Right.
And, I have to admit to being somewhat stunned at how quickly the politicians turned a deaf ear to us, and now we're down to the wire with people who, quote, are on our side, unquote, now taking on the Tea Party.
You're flapping
us
down.
Belittling and slapping us down, and I think it's time for us to rise up and do exactly what I and many others were calling for 4 or 5 years ago. And it's time for a big smackdown of Republicans.
Yep, it's time to. It's a major bloodletting needs to happen, not only in Washington D.C. but Jefferson City, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep. It's not.
Okay,
you know,
folks,
it's not just national or state. It's all around the. It's the whole thing.
Yep. Okay, we're going to have to wrap it up. Look for Culture Vigilante on Facebook and Twitter. Look for Culture Vigilante at Missouri Grassroots Radio. We will be here next week, folks, Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. Cindy McGee and I will be back here, and we look forward to seeing you then. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition.
a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.
No. Oh. There you are. You were on red mic. I don't know what put you on red mic. Are you there? Hello? I guess we're done.